Hey, everybody. You're listening to Pucked in the Head. My name's Jason Carello. I'm here with Russell Arbuthnot. Today, we're going to try something a little different. We're going to get to a few different things that are in and around the news headlines. It's kind of a rapid-fire thing that we're calling one-timers.
All right, Jason, slide it over. I'm going to clap this top cheddar.
I have no idea what you just said.
Half clapper top cheddar.
Yes. I'm hungry. Is that English?
It's hockey slang.
Oh, you see, I know a lot about hockey, but I can't skate.
It's okay. You can still know about the hockey slang.
All right. Well, I'm going to learn.
You're an ankle bender is what you're saying.
I am totally an ankle bender in every possible connotation of that term.
I wasn't aware there was more connotations.
Yeah. You didn't grow up the same way I did, obviously. Okay. So our first topic in our one-timers, I'm going to slide it over to you. You're going to clap at top cheddar.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, good job.
See what I did there?
Picking up on that.
All right. So,
like a true ankle bender.
Chalk up the apple for old Jason.
That doesn't fit in.
Apple. It's an assist.
Chalk up the old apple.
Anyway. All right. Milos Raonic has unlocked the beat Rafa Nadal achievement. I'm using online gaming slang now, unlocking an achievement. Like Foursquare,
right?
Know?
So yeah. I know a lot about online gaming, but
okay.
I
so
can't
Milos
play.
Raonic had never beaten Rafa Nadal before. He has now done so. Did so at the BNP Paribas tournament in Indian Wells. He then lost to Roger Federer, mm-hmm. who he has beaten once before.
Mm-hmm.
But the only guy that's left on that list. Djokovic. He hasn't beat Djokovic. So what do you think? This is a big day in Canadian, or a big month in Canadian tennis?
I think it's great for him, personally. And yeah, I mean, it's big for Canadian tennis. I would say, I mean, he's been on quite a bit of a roll. Is it tainted a little bit because of Rafa's recent injuries and his, perhaps, well, I don't know, rust or whatever it's called?
Not at all, man. A win is a win is a win.
Oh, is it?
We're going to get into that on another episode later on. But because I know you have a feeling that a win is not a win.
Well, maybe not quite in such simplistic terms. But
for our art aficionados out there, this is not a pipe. We'll talk about that on another podcast at another time. You gave me a kind of a blank look there. You have no idea what I was just talking about.
No clue.
Okay, so when we do that episode of the podcast, I'm going to have to bring in some realia so you can see what I'm talking about.
I have an idea of what it is, but I'm not fully aware.
Yeah, basically, I think this is a huge psychological hurdle for him to get over.
Mm-hmm.
He's now beaten two legends in Nadal and Federer. Mm-hmm. He's beaten Murray before. He's recently, he did beat, even though he lost in the Davis Cup, and at the U.S. Open, he beat Nishikori at another tournament. So he has beaten most of the top 10 before.
Well, each of the top five than Djokovic, yes.
So this is huge. He's the number six guy in the world, and he has beaten everyone except Djokovic before.
His batting average isn't so good, though.
Okay.
But regardless, like you said, I mean, it's a big hurdle for him.
He's young, and these are huge mental challenges for young players that are up and coming. I know it's weird to call a number six guy in the world up and coming, but he is still up and coming.
Well, and that's it's been a quick rise.
Meteoric,
for him,
as they say. So, congratulations to Milos Raonic. It's very exciting to watch him play. I'm wondering if you're going to see a lot of younger players with that one armband, the compression sleeve.
The Allen Iverson sleeve?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
What's next for Milos?
Probably a calf compression sleeve, I'm thinking.
How about in regards to tournament play?
Oh, sorry. you're looking at scheduling?
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea.
I know he's very busy.
Once again, you're assuming I've done some research.
Hey, you're the tennis guy here.
I do know that they are going to be playing tennis at a future time in a future location.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually know what a future location looks like.
But probably somewhere relatively nice.
Probably somewhere that has ground.
And a net.
And there will they a will
net
use
available.
A net.
available to them.
And there will probably be very attractive people and rich people in the audience.
Okay.
That's my prediction.
Full of information.
Yes. Okay. Next one. It is March Madness currently.
It is.
There have been some huge upsets on the basketball court. I have no idea about anything to do with March Madness. I just wanted to say the words March Madness.
I'm going to drop a bomb on you here.
Are you going to say the word Gonzaga?
No, no. I'm involved in a bracket for the first time of my life.
Wait a moment. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I challenged you to get into a bracket a couple of weeks ago as know-nothings. We would both go in knowing nothing.
Yes.
And you declined.
Yes, well, Roberto Luongo didn't send me that invitation, so I had to take him up on it. It's interesting. I'm
very disappointed
in you,
Russell.
I'm seventh out of 35.
And that's because everybody in any kind of pundit position. No, anybody in any kind of pundit position is scratching their heads because all kinds of upsets have been happening in the first few days.
Well, Baylor, who I had slated to go all the way and win the championship, lost their first game, the third seed, and they were out right away, and that just screwed up everything. But I'm still hanging on. I had a couple of upsets that came through for me. Mm-hmm. If only Wofford would have advanced, I would have been set.
Damn you, Wofford!
I'm pretty sure the only reason I picked Wofford was for the name.
That's a great name.
It is a great name.
It sounds like
Earl of Wofford.
No, it sounds like an angry Muppet.
Wofford?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could have been up there with Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah. Wofford.
Statler and Wofford. There you go.
There you go.
Okay. Steve Nash is retired.
Yeah. Legend.
Absolute legend.
Do you think he is possibly one of the most important Canadian figures in all of sport?
I think he is up there with Wayne Gretzky and Haley Wickenheiser for sure.
You know what? I mean, for popularity and recognizability, he is probably not quite at the same level. But I would say for importance of Canadian sport, I would give him the edge on both of them simply because everybody plays hockey in Canada. Nobody plays basketball in Canada up until Steve Nash broke that barrier.
Definitely.
And now you've got Wiggins, Bennett.
I would argue against him being more important than Wayne Gretzky, for example, because Wayne Gretzky broke the game around the world.
Do you not think if it wasn't Wayne Gretzky, though, it would have been somebody else?
No.
Around the same time?
No, because Wayne Gretzky changed how the game was played, a lot like Bobby Orr did. But the difference was Bobby Orr did not change how the game was watched. He changed how the game was played, but he didn't change how the game was watched. Wayne Gretzky changed how the game was watched. He changed the finances of the game. He changed the opinions of the game in the big markets in the States. He is the reason there are three teams in California and three viable franchises in California. Steve Nash did not create any franchises.
But this, again, now you're relating Wayne Gretzky's importance to the NHL, not to Canadian sports.
So if you're strictly looking at his importance to the Maple Leaf, I would argue that Steve Nash is important for growing the grassroots of basketball.
Which is a Canadian sport.
Which was invented by a Canadian, that's true. But as you said, all Canadian kids grow up watching hockey. Well, and all is even kind of a difficult word to use now. All Canadians used to
the
grow
majority,
up watching hockey.
Yeah, however you want to put it. I think we're both on the same page.
But Steve Nash actually made kids think, I could be a professional basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
Most kids who played all kinds of sports, I played basketball as a kid. I was horrible. But I never got a basketball in my hand and said, okay, I'm Michael Jordan, right?
Yeah, well, that's
when
the thing.
When I had a hockey stick in my hand, I was saying, I'm Ray Bourque.
Sergio Mimesso.
I'm older than that. By the time Sergio Momesso came around, I was not.
But that's what I'm saying, right? Is a lot of the time, basketball historically was a schoolyard game. And I think that Steve Nash changed that perception of basketball being a game to a sport and a legitimate sport that people watch, that want to play, and perhaps probably less so than Canadians in hockey, but perhaps might have a future in and actually can make something of themselves and make a decent living doing it. Or better than decent living.
I don't know about your analogy of game and sport, because we had very good collegiate basketball at places like SFU and places like
in Canada.
UBC, but they were contained within Canada. So it was still sport, but it was like the CFL. Like if you succeeded in the CFL, that didn't mean that you were a world-class football player, right?
Of course.
Even though, I mean, you're still in one of the best leagues in the world, but you were not, you weren't recognized.
You can't go and compete in the best league in the world,
unless you're a guy like
NFL.
Doug Flutie or Mervyn Fernandez, right?
Right.
Or Warren.
Yeah.
But and like, then very small sample size.
And they get plucked quite quickly.
And even then, I mean, you look at Warren Moon was not Canadian. He was an American.
Right.
Mervyn Fernandez, not Canadian. Flutie was a Canadian, at least.
Yes.
So for him to go down and be a successful quarterback in the NFL was a big deal. And that's why you see some Canadian players actually getting drafted by NFL teams and actually taking part in, you know, major collegiate programs in the States. And Steve Nash has done the same thing with basketball.
Yep.
And we've got like major players in March Madness, for example. Gonzaga is led by a couple of Canadians.
Yes.
You've got NBA players coming out of college, sometimes coming out of high school, going straight onto NBA rosters and dominating. You would not have seen that before Steve Nash, and you didn't see
Yeah.
Steve Nash. So for an undersized white Canadian kid
from
Victoria,
the West Coast,
from Victoria, not just the West Coast, but the island.
Yeah,
he's even separated from the mainland.
Yeah,
for him to go and win 8 All-Star appearances, 2 MVPs.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
And playing at the same time as Kobe and Nowitzki and Shaq. And he got 2 MVP awards. Oh, my God. That's massive.
Shaq had had his doubts about Steve Nash's second MVP award, if I recall. But
well, lot of people did.
Yeah.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
But the fact is, just the fact that he was in the conversation multiple years is amazing.
Yeah.
A lot like John Stockton in Utah
with Karl Malone.
With Karl Malone, I mean, he was such a good setup guy.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate that he played at that same time as Kobe, winning championships in L.A. and the same time as the LeBron winning with the Heat, because he's a guy that really deserved a championship.
Yeah. Two questions about Steve Nash.
Sure.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Oh, first ballot.
Okay. Second question. Are the Grizzlies still here if they drafted Steve Nash?
If they had drafted Steve Nash, did they have the opportunity to draft Steve Nash?
Yeah. They drafted, I believe it was Abdur-Rahim Steve Nash. And Steve Nash went 11th overall to Phoenix.
In that year, I thought he went earlier than that.
No, I believe he was the 11th overall pick.
Okay. Well, certainly Steve Nash had a better attitude than Abdur-Rahim did.
Mm-hmm.
Abdur-Rahim really felt like he'd been sent to Siberia.
He wasn't alone in that.
I mean,
aside from Big Country, I think pretty much every other player that the Grizzlies drafted didn't want to be
here. So certainly his attitude would have done him well here. However, he wouldn't have developed into the player that he developed into. Wouldn't have had the talent around him in order to... I mean, he needed someone to set up. Who was he going to set up?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Big Crunchy was a bust.
Yep.
I mean, there was nobody. Big Crunchy was supposed to post up and do little baby hooks into the. And he couldn't drop a quarter in a well. The guy was awful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm sure he's a very nice man, but he just wasn't a good basketball player. So I think that Steve Nash, he probably was good that he didn't get drafted by Vancouver.
But would the Grizzlies still be here? Steve Nash was here.
No, because Nash, I don't think Nash would have made that big of a difference.
Okay.
Because I don't think he would have, he would not have become an MVP had he played in Vancouver.
All right. Fair enough.
In my opinion.
Okay.
One thing I would like to say about Steve Nash, the I love the fact that he is so involved not just in basketball programs. He's involved in the community. He's involved in soccer. He regularly works out with the Whitecaps the Whitecaps too, in kids programs and high school programs, in soccer, basketball. He just wants people to be active.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like Simon Whitfield, also from Victoria, two-time Olympic medalist. Yep. In the triathlon. You know, those two spindly white kids from Victoria, they've done some good stuff.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah. So I just think it's not even a question whether he goes in the Hall of Fame or not. I don't know a lot of basketball history. Are there any MVPs that are not in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know either. The only thing that I can possibly think of is the championship.
He's got no ring.
Would work against him. But
definitely.
That being said,
I can't imagine that John Stockton and Karl Malone aren't in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But again, I don't know a lot about basketball history, so I can't answer that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this, please tell me if you'd rather save this for another episode entirely.
Okay, I will. Very, very organized.
A recent article in The Guardian has talked about Nike Academy beating what I call Barca, what you call Barca, under-19 team. And it suggests that corporate, not just ownership of team, but corporate identity of teams may be in the future for English Premier League. So you wouldn't see, for example, the Vancouver Whitecaps with Bell across the front of their jersey, which already happens. Every team has a corporate logo on the front.
Right, yep.
Instead, you would actually see the Bell Whitecaps would be the name of the team.
Hmm.
Do you think that's forthcoming? And or do you think that it's simply a matter where you're going to see teams like they are now? They're going to have the Nike swoosh on the front, but they are the Manchester City, or they are, you know,
right,
Leicester, whatever.
I guess I guess that would be kind of following suit with like the building right, naming rights, and all that stuff. I have a tough time seeing that coming to fruition. But that being said, money talks, and we all know. Corporations, I mean, if they feel like they can gain an advantage over their competitors by doing that, I can't see them not at least making a push for it. I wouldn't be a fan.
Nike has a bigger GDP than dozens of countries.
Right. Now,
Philip Morris, for example, regularly takes legal battles against countries that try to regulate smoking and wins. Companies have huge power and leverage.
So, I mean, what would be the advantage? Is it just the fact that now that that name is tied to the franchise and in all of their media, it's going to say, like, using your example, the Bell Whitecaps as opposed to the Vancouver Whitecaps?
Well,
right
now, every photo and every fan wearing a jersey is advertising.
Exactly.
For
yeah, it's
anyway.
Already there.
But in the results, and when they talk about the team, they talk about the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Yeah.
They talk about, you know, the Stoke FC.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? New York City FC.
Yeah.
They don't talk about the Adidas FC.
Right.
So now that would actually be the name of the team.
Hmm. Is that, yeah, I suppose. I mean, you'd have to change everything. Like, I can't see, again, using the Whitecaps analogy, I can't see the Whitecaps. People are going to refer to them as the Whitecaps, regardless. They're not going to start saying the Bell Whitecaps. So realistically,
in formal writing, right now, the full name of the team is the one that starts. It's the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Right.
Right? Named for the city they're in.
Yes.
Well, what if they were named for the building they were in? Or what if they were named for the company that owned them? I mean, even the Vancouver Canucks,
I don't see much
still have an orca on their jersey from when they were owned by Orca Bay.
Yeah. I just don't see a huge advantage to it personally, but maybe that's just me. for the amount of money that they would have to pay to have that right, I'm not sure if it's that much more of a leap over what they already have. I mean, Bell already must pay a pretty penny to have their logo splattered all over the Vancouver Whitecaps media. I'm not so sure that, you know, the spoken word or the printed word in a newspaper or on a newscast is really going to give them that much more exposure.
But here's the thing. If they bought the team, they wouldn't have to pay for the advertising.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Right? They're already, like you said, they're already paying through the nose for the sponsorship rights and the logo rights. What if they put that money into the ownership of the team instead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could. They could. I don't know how many... I guess it wouldn't matter. I was just going to say, I don't know how many executives or managers and people involved in the game would feel comfortable doing that and working under that corporate environment.
Do you really think that MLS would say no to basically a blank checkbook?
Well, I don't mean them. I mean literally like the management of a specific team. But they, again, same question applies. I don't think
it's
they would
not
really
that
care.
Big a change for those guys. It's not that big a change. They already have that logo takes up 30% of the front of the jersey.
Well, all of a sudden though, you have a giant corporation over your shoulder. The Vancouver Whitecaps, aside from MLS, who do they answer to? Themselves. Now all of a sudden, if you are the Bell Whitecaps, you have Bell. Your autonomy is greatly compromised if you're owned by a larger corporation.
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I thought that the question of whether or not this would happen in other sports is actually more interesting to me than whether or not it would happen in soccer. I think that soccer
is already probably the most integrated sport with marketing and advertising than over all of the other sports.
Although European hockey is, I mean, guys
have
billboards,
yeah.
Right? But to actually have the central logo on the center of the chest be your main sponsor,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, it's a strange thing for someone who grew up with North American sport.
Right.
Even I used to watch NASL well before the MLS came along. When I watched the North American Soccer League, it was the New York Cosmos. Mm-hmm. And they had a Cosmos logo on the front of their jersey. Mm-hmm. There was no sponsor in the middle of the chest.
It's the emblem of the team, and that's all you see.
I still don't particularly enjoy wearing a Whitecaps jersey with Bell on the front.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
I wear other gear with Whitecaps stuff on it. But the one that says Bell on the front, I balk at because I am not a billboard.
Right. You should be getting some kickback for that.
I feel like you shouldn't have to pay over $100 for a shirt
to advertise.
An advertisement for a company.
Yeah.
I mean, you're already advertising for a team, but to advertise for a company.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not cheering for Bell. I'm cheering for the Whitecaps.
Right.
Right. Although technically I'm not cheering at all because I'm taking pictures as media. So I'm not cheering at all. And considering we have mentioned Bell several times, we should probably mention Telus and Rogers a couple of times.
Well, I'm not. Listen, my Rogers contract is up in a couple months. So Bell,
call me.
Feel free. Feel free.
All right. Well, that's all we have for our rapid fire
one-timers
called one-timers.
We were 0-for-4 on those.
Great save,
Habby Boulin.
There we go. Great save, Habby. He got his left Habby on that.
Or maybe it was his right Boulin.
There you go. Thank you, Don Taylor.
All right, Jason. Well, thank you for the discussion.
Thank you, Russell. Good luck in your future endeavors.
Thanks. I'm going to focus the rest of my evening on sleeping and recovering from my poker night.
And planning how to spend your 120 bones.
Maybe a new pillow is in order. Let me speak clean. I've got to sit and wait for my mouth to catch up to my brain.
time is spinning clockwise down the drain. Come back to me soon, because I'll soon be out of range. I'm feeling able as Cain. I only take these for pain. Broke out of rehab just like a happy that put by my train. Don't you worry, I'll see you back here again. Familiar terrain, I'm firing metamorphs and cannons on the Spanish main, but I'm alright. It's just a red wine stain. It's all too normal now, where once it seemed so strange. Time for a change. Change.
Thank you for listening to Puck in the Head. My name is Jason Brello. For Russell Harbignut, I wish you a good day. Next up, the glorious sounds of the Orchid Pirate, the Winnipeg band, in Vancouver, on 101.7 FM Civil Radio, serving Abbotsford, Mission, Chilliwack, and all points.
I've got the fear once again, I can't remember my name, and now I'm 20 stories up on some construction crane, and I'm tearing up the rules to the game. Now the moon's on the wane, I'm feeling slightly more sane, I'm riding shotgun with my stuntman, and we're ready for fame, but I'm losing my grip on the rain. It's all too normal now, and once it seemed so strange. Time for a change, change. Time for a change, time for a change, change.
Smell my shoe!